Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Gincho is there, and he's thinking to himself that he doesn't think he ever asked how Gyuriko died. That is so sad. It's like they've just been hanging out this whole time, and finally he's like, I don't think I ever asked how he died. Welcome back to Bleach Boys. We're doing Can't Fear Your Word Volume 2 for the first time ever. First time for us two. Pythes has read it already. He's the lore master here. But look at this thing. It is fucking thick.
Intimidating.
So we're going to do all the way through Chapter 9. It's got a nice little cliffhanger ends on it. It sets up a lot of stuff. And then come next episode, we will go through the rest of the book. It is a thick boy here. This is probably the biggest of all three. So if you're following along, read up to Chapter 9 and then we'll go from there. There is an interlude as well. And then we'll move on. So lots of good shit. What did you think of the book?
Dude, I like it. I mean, not just because it's very heavily focusing on one of my favorite characters.
Yep, that is true.
You know.
That is true.
But I just, you know, it's a little bit of a payoff from last one. So we got a lot of setup and it's still very much what you said, where you like the ends of like series episodes where they're wrapping up. It still feels that way, but at the same time, also brand new to me. So I'm kind of giddy about it.
This one felt like from the little under half of the book that we read, it was all one giant fight. I was like, geez, I'm almost like hopping back and forth a million times over and over again.
I told you.
Dude, you were so right. I don't know. I'm just enjoying it all the way through right now.
It's just like I could surmise this book where it's like you're watching a fight. This character appears. Cut back. So like whatever happened to that character? And then it's like two other people talking about that constantly. I'm like, dude, this is crazy.
You know what it reminds me of a little bit? Brotherhood. How like the whole last chunk of it, the last like 10 episodes is all one day.
Yeah, it was wild. It was just nonstop bullshit. So in a loving way, of course.
Of course.
I'm going to say something controversial. I think the first half of this book is not very good.
Whoa.
Okay.
Not because it's bad, but just because I like the back half so much, I kind of don't care about what happens before then.
Damn, okay. But when you read it the first time, did you feel this way as well?
I fucking loved it. But now that I know what's coming, I'm like, fuck this chapter. Let's get to the next one. Let's get to the next one. So good.
Interesting. Well, let's hop into it then with the interlude. This should be really short. Interlude's not very long, of course. It's the interlude. But it's more stuff about basically asking what the Soul King is, which is interesting because they actually use Soul King and not Rayo like the last one was using. And they state that no one really knows what the Soul King is. Not even the Soul Reapers who call themselves Death Gods. We see a young boy asking who is a member of the royal family asking the same question. Basically, like, who is this Soul King? And he's informed that it's the linchpin that holds the three worlds together. Without him, the worlds would all crumble. He naturally asks the next question anybody would ask is, well, what it was like before the Soul King was even a thing? To which he was very quickly hushed, told not to ask such a question, and it didn't exist prior to the Soul King. We cut forward now. We see that young boy is that bitch Tokinata, as he is in the Suniyoshiro library and has just finished cracking a cipher. And the cipher translates to, we record the crimes of our ancestors here. Tokunaga smiles and laughs, and he destroys the stone. And it states that this is perfect, as it now gives him meaning to his life. And he says, had it not been for this, he would probably have followed the noble path, living his life for hubris and doing the classic noble evil things. But now he has a goal to satisfy his desires to the maximum extent possible, and a playground to set his evil free. And his goal is just to be basically as evil as a bitch as possible. And he's like, yeah, this is great. 10 out of 10.
Dude, that's the I literally shortened it for the intro to saying, intro confirms Tokinata is a legit bitch.
Yep.
So I also wrote that down, and for anyone keeping count, we're up to fuck that bitch Tokinata number 5.
Continuing on from last week. This interlude is basically him going to the library. He's like, this is great because now I can be a dickhead for no reason. This is great.
Dude, seriously, I was like, God damn, you're such a dick.
Like, mm-hmm. he was going to be a dick anyway, but now he's like, oh, great, validation. That's all I needed.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then we cut to the Karakura town after this, and we see Urahara and Shuhei. They're in deep negotiation for an electric guitar.
I thought that was hilarious.
A guitar that Urahara states is from the legendary Galmuna Ecstasy, which I Googled is not anybody. Yeah. It's not, it doesn't exist.
I also Googled that.
Same.
Yeah. Urahara is telling Shuhei how this is a genuine one-of-one replica of the original. And so in some ways, it's even better because each person that has made a replica of this guitar has made an improvement to the original. And put their soul in each iteration. He says also it can be used as a sheath for Zanpakuto. And he's willing to sell it for a low price of 3 months of his salary.
Jesus. Mm-hmm.
And Shuhei is like, in deep thought, maybe, yo, that sounds pretty good with a sheath for the thing. And finally he goes, will you also issue me a loan if I do it? And he's like, yeah, all right. And then we see Ururu and Genta kind of watching through the crack in the door. And they comment, man, that guy's getting ripped off again. And he's like, yeah, he's such a good customer. And
I love how Ururu says
that's
that.
That's the interlude right there. It's a setup of both of our kind of our key players here of Shuhei, Hisagi, and then Tokinata.
And my notes, all I have is, goddamn, Urahara knows a sucker when he sees one.
Yep. And Shuhei is a fucking sucker.
Oh, he definitely is.
My one note I wrote for that was just get grifted, loser.
So good. The interludes so far have been pretty interesting. I will say, having watched As Your Blood War and it still being fresh, I did kind of roll my eyes a little bit, but I understand why it was in the novel when they kicked off, like, what is the Soul King? I'm like, how many times are we going to have the discussion? But it gets there. It makes sense. It sets off a little bit of Tokinata backstory, mm-hmm. where it shows that, you know, he was kind of always, like, interested in this answer, and everybody was like, yeah, fuck off, loser.
No, not fuck off. Shut up. Don't ask questions.
Yep.
Yep.
True. So it was interesting. Two different sides. And also, I like that you see Tokinata, like, kind of happy he could be evil, and Shuhei is trying to buy a guitar. It's like there's two different worlds that we're living in here.
The flip of a coin.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were wondering last volume why they were like, hey, Shuhei, can't you at least afford to eat out at these fancy restaurants? You have an assistant captain. He's like, fucking all my money goes to Kisuke.
He knows it. He's just like, well, I'm going to be broke for the next 3 months.
Too busy getting scammed.
Don't forget, he has to pay for upkeep on his motorcycle and gas and batteries.
Oh, true.
For the amp.
Oh, that's right.
For his other electric guitar.
He's never getting out of debt. It's the American dream.
Our boy might be American. Holy shit.
Shuhei American confirmed.
All right. We ready for chapter 6?
Yeah. Let's just jump into
now,
it.
Now, the chapters, this is the first chapter of volume 2, but it is chapter 6 because last volume ended on 5. All right. So we kick off with Shuhei. He's still in Karakura Town, and he is reading an introduction that he has written for Urahara about him and Karakura Town, describing the Urahara Shoten, the Urahara shop, as a hidden gem only a few candy collectors know. And to those who know about hollows and spirits, the place serves as a safe haven to run to in case of trouble. He mentions that Karakura Town is the same place where Ishin Shiba met a human woman who would give birth to the man who changed the Soul Society. And Urahara immediately calls him out on the fact that he is, one, surprised he read that all to him with a straight face because mm-hmm. really gassed up Urahara Shop, gassed up Karakura Town. And Urahara also mentions that it's interesting that you called it a human woman when she is clearly a Quincy. And Hisagi at this point, which I did like this a lot, he, as a journalist, he obviously wants to protect Ichigo and all that stuff as well. And he thinks to himself that even though the war is over, a lot of the noble houses and people in the Soul Society, being related to a Quincy is still a bit touchy. So he, even though he's sure Ichigo wouldn't mind having that out there, he doesn't want to put that out there and basically like slander this hero who saved everybody as a Quincy himself.
I thought that was super cool. Very much a journalistic thing to do.
And he even mentions, even though there are Quincy supporters like the Ishin family.
Yep.
You know, not the Ishin, the Uryu family.
Ishida.
There you go. Thank you. The Ishida family. And he's like, still too touchy. Still don't want to put that out there. I'm like, interesting. It shows we're getting a lot into the political side of Soul Society, these whole books. And they're staying with it, and it's really interesting. Urahara then hands Hisagi a bunch of papers saying, don't worry, I have the answers to everything you want to know right here. And it turns out to just be a recipe for one of their most famous candies, the Hollow Hollow Hollow. And it's just like requires a bajillion pounds of sugar and half fucking salt or something like that. And Hisagi's just like, yeah, this is not it, but I'm going to keep it just in case because I might write an article on this later. And Hisagi is continuing to ask questions, try to get information out of Urahara, but, you know, he's a wily motherfucker, and he's not answering anything. Eventually, Hisagi notes that had it not been for the pill that Urahara made during the war, and it not been for them being able to get up to the Soul Palace, which he also contributed to, the war could have been lost had not been for him. And Uriah replies that he honestly should be the one thanking them for giving him the chance to use one of his preventative measures, and then becomes serious for a moment and says that aside from that, he's not going to comment on anything. He's like, only the facts that you just listed right there, that's the only thing I want to say. And Hisagi gets serious and tries to get him to answer again, but Urahara just deflects it towards Genta, who's still watching through the cracks in the door, and saying, "Yo, don't be too serious. Genta might cry and wet the bed again."
I thought that was hilarious.
And Genta gets so upset and jumps through yelling and immediately tries to attack Urahara, who is stopped midair by Tessai, who we've not seen in a long time, and pinned to the ground while Ururu uses her hair to begin tickling his feet.
I love how Tessai is described as a brawny man the whole time.
So Urahara tells Ururu, like, hey, you know what? Make sure we stock up on 500 kg of bouncy balls. And Tessai just carries Genta away while Ururu keeps tickling him. And Hisagi comments on Genta and Ururu, saying that they're Reiraku, which is, by the way, the spirit ribbons that we don't talk about fucking ever.
I have that right here. Beginning. I was like, thank God someone mentioned that
he
again.
He says they both have unique ones. They actually bring up spirit ribbons a lot here. And Urahara turns to Sagi and he's like, so, like, what do you think they are then? Like, what, like, if they're so unique, you know? And he says that he thinks they might be, like, temporary souls, but not really, because they do, like, act on orders, but they don't grow or anything like that. And then he thinks of a lion-shaped plushie that often appears in Soul Society.
Oh, I wonder who that could be.
Yeah, and he says that potentially a mod soul. And Uroha's like, oh, okay, you're sharper than you seem, but that doesn't mean you're right. He's like, the only other thing I think of would be something like Nemu.
And R.I.P. Urahara, my girl.
Yeah. Urahara immediately corrects him and is like, well, don't put that out there into the ether, because if you say that, Mary will want to use them for experiments, okay? And he's like, their insides are actually quite different from Nemu, and Mary probably knows that and is so happy imagining my bitter face from him surpassing me. And then he goes, but I've never been bitter in front of Mary. So how could he know? You know, like, and that's the end of that little conversation there, which super good. Most of this book, actually, when we, I think always, until all these chapters, it's Hisagi and Urahara talking. What I was mentioning in the beginning of the book, where it's like, yeah, they constantly introduce a character and hop over. It's Hisagi and Urahara every time. It's like, oh, so what about that guy? And it's like, oh, the guy that just showed up. What about this girl? Oh, yeah. It's like, here you go. Like, thank you. Love that.
I just love how Urahara has preventative measures for so many things.
I think they said in that thing, I summarized it, but that he had like 3,000 preventative measures or something ready to go. And he's like, in reality, he's probably telling the truth, where he was happy he got to use one of them.
Just one.
Yep.
Fucking Batman over here.
Yeah.
I just want to say that you skipped a part where Keith K's like, hey, could you describe me as Shady instead?
I like that.
And could you
if there's any favorite lines that I skip, tell me, because I tried to sum it up as much as possible.
I also had a question answered from, like, I think it was a Bleach Boys podcast from a while ago, where I was like, "What are Genta and Ururu?" And literally explained in here.
Well, we don't know. Not explained.
Not fully explained. Not explained. We get, like,
similar to Nemu,
alluded to
a little bit.
I remember Pythes going, "Hit me with the line, Pythes."
Hey, maybe we'll find out and can't figure your own world.
Yep.
Now, I have a legit question. I guess a legit follow-up question. Is it answered in these novels what they are?
They basically already did. They're kind of mod souls that he made that are like Nemu, but not really.
Okay, that's what I figured.
That's
okay,
as close as you're going to get.
Okay, interesting.
So you did find out.
Okay, all right. Cool. So next, we move to the Soul Society R&D department, you know, Speak of the Devil, and we have the classic anime moment where Mary feels like something is bothering him, and he's like, ah, it must be the ramblings of a jealous scientist somewhere, and Akon is talking to Mary and sees Mary's looking at a screen of, like, high-def satellite images that is, he says, is more precise than anything the real world has, and Akon comments on how precise it is and asks why would he go through all the trouble of building his own if he could just upgrade the visual department system. Here we learn about the visual department. I didn't know it was a separate thing, and now they run hand in hand with the R&D department and are responsible for the built-in images that we've seen many a times in the anime where they're watching stuff. And one of the turning points that established that department as, like, legit and basically running hand in hand was when Hyosu actually spotted Rukia in the real world as one of her gi guys, and that's what got her caught. Mayuri comments that he is going to be phasing the visual department out of the R&D department. And Akon immediately says if that had anything to do with the Noble House's interfering with the surveillance, which is what happened last novel when they snowed the spiritual suppression. They told them, nah, don't look at that. Don't look at that. And says, I'm sure the visual department is having a bad time with the four Noble Houses as well. Mary's like, have you not noticed? They're in on it. The decorative aristocrats take turns running the visual department, but it was established and is managed by the four Noble Houses. Miri says the Sunayoshiro clans are the ones managing the past themselves. And before the creation of the Underground Assembly Hall's Great Archive, Central 46's Great Archive, the Sunayoshiros were the sentries recording all history. Miri looks to the screen, where we're now looking at the Rukongai, and says, I found my targets. I'm going out to the experiment myself. And Akon asks one final question as he's on his way out and asks, why are we separating from the visual department? Miri says, the man who has the slacker job of managing the visual department killed all the leaders of the Sunayoshiro family and became the head of that family. I've just determined that man will hinder my research. Which, Tokinata, if we can't spell it out.
That bitch.
You know, that he's been chilling, relaxing, having a cush job this whole time, and he officially murdered everybody and made his way to the top.
He was like a mall cop just looking at everything.
Miri's like, fuck that guy. I'm no way.
So if you ever wonder, how does Tokinata know this or that? It's because that's his job.
All he does is just sit there and watch everybody. What a pervert.
Yeah. It's true, though. And it's like, you do see later, he's got his own little system set up later in the book.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's the fucking CIA.
Planning coups and shit. He is the CIA. So now, we head over to the Rukongai where we were just watching from the satellite. And, of course, we're greeted by none other than Giriko, Ginjo, and Tsukushima. And they are just vibing on their way back to Kukaku's when Ginjo can sense that they're being watched, just like the feeling of his Soul Reaper badge back in the day. And then an arrow of lightning heads towards them as Ginjo sidesteps it. And they call out to the attacker, but they're unable to see exactly where they are. And just then, almost as, quote, it oozed out of the shadows, a voice came calling out behind them. Ginjo turned to see a woman wearing a white Western outfit and with signs of experimentations all over. She shouts, you should all just hurry up and die. And then a flash of lightning comes down from the sky towards Ginjo and crew. Very mysterious who that
character is. I don't know who it was. They do describe that the Western outfit may have been shortened and you know, exposing some skin.
Don't know who this character I don't know could who possibly that is. Be, who might have used lightning powers back in the day. I don't know.
I was kind of excited.
As soon as I got this chapter, I just wrote Jose is pogging right now.
I wrote Side Bay has entered.
Well, no, Main Bay is a child now. So
well,
I don't
approve of that.
Jose, Main Bay is allowed up until a certain point in Thousand-Year Blood War, and then you need to pivot.
And then afterwards, I leave her.
Like, if the Hell Arc ever continues, not your Main Bay anymore, Jose. Oh, but Hell Arc, she could be old by then. Yeah? How many years have passed? Like
I think she'd be about Kazui's age, right?
All right, sorry, Jose. Sorry, dog.
Yeah, so she out.
She was like a kid in the last chapter.
Once she blows up, I'm like, all right, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I go to the next bay.
It's like, you were only Main Bay for OG Nemu. This remake Nemu, not the same.
Not the same. Mm-hmm. Not the same vibes.
Is this even
going to
be like,
you know,
the same personality?
In my top threes, you know.
True. Well, true. That is true.
It's just going to be Nemu.
I'm just going to say it's my child. I'm a single dad now. And what's her name?
So you've imprinted on the new one.
No.
God, no, that's even worse. Ew.
You basically are Jacob from Twilight.
Have you seen the thing? Robert Pattinson's wife is legit pregnant, and he put, hey, Taylor Lautner, stay away from my wife.
No, I haven't. That's great, though.
You do not bring up Twilight on this fucking podcast.
All right. Well,
anyways,
over to Karakura Town. We're in the Urahara shop again, of course. And Hisagi is just continuing to ask Urahara questions, trying to figure out what the deets are. And he just eventually, the questions, he is trying to figure out what interviewer style works best on someone like Urahara. And he eventually decides to just be honest. And he's like, listen, going forward, half of the question I ask will be for the article. The other half are just for my personal interest. And Hisagi says he will have to publish a special article before this one even comes out because he's trying to do two. One's on the Sunayoshiro family and the new head. And then the one that he's really working on is like the true story of the war. And Urahara asks straight up if the special article will be about the Sunayoshiro's new head. Hisagi replies, oh, then you know? And says that I'm really trying to figure out what this Soul Reaper kid I saw the other day is. And not kid like Hitsugaya, but kid. And Urahara becomes serious after hearing this, and Sagi thinks how he can sense the intent for facts and data coming off of Urahara, and recants basically everything that he's seen so far to Urahara. Everything we've learned in Volume 1, he tells to Urahara. Urahara comments on Sanosuke, saying that he was always incredible with his Kido, and even respect from Unohana in that fashion. But he was only good with the patients that were directly in front of him. Outside of that, he was, quote, incredibly mean. Like, so mean-spirited that him and Unohana got into it multiple times.
God damn, he was a dick.
And he even mentions that because it went so far one way, it's most likely why a kind-hearted one got chose to be a replacement.
They had to put my girl in.
Yeah, it's like, Sanosuke blazed the path, and they're like, please, Please.
Just give us someone who's nice.
Because he was there 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was her lieutenant during the Turn Back the Pendulum arc.
Oh. So Isane is relatively fresh as a lieutenant, right?
Relatively. There is a shot on like the Bleach Wiki where like, yeah, you can just vaguely see him in part of the anime.
Oh, that's cool.
That is very cool. After that, Hisagi continues to ask about this kid and how this kid had a mixture of Quincy, Soul Reaper, Hollow, and human, and he came out of a Garganta. Urahara murmurs, he's like, oh, I see, so that's like how far the Sunishiro family is willing to go, but Hollow isn't supposed to be a requirement. And then Urahara basically snaps back out of it and asks Hisagi, are you sure this is the first time that you felt something like this? There isn't someone else with all of those traits? And then Hisagi thinks, he's like, oh, Ichigo. Ichigo's like the same thing.
Light goes off in his head.
And Urahara says, actually, there is one other person who's very similar, someone with the essence of a Hollow, the power of a Soul Reaper, and another power all at once. And we learn that it is Genjo. And that is the end of chapter 6. So a lot of other banter and stuff that I cut out of there. We get way more of that banter to come up. There's some stuff that relates to Yoruichi actually coming up as well. But so far, so good. Off to a good start. Lots of setup still for the Sunishiro family. Lots of setup for the stuff we learned in Volume 1. Or I guess some further setup off of that stuff. So interesting. Really interesting.
I liked it, though. It was like a lot of just info. Mm-hmm. Info and lore dump, which was... It's always fantastic in Bleach because there's just stuff that we didn't even know about before.
And like, right before Candace starts to attack... Sorry. A mysterious woman... starts to attack.
Please, thank you.
Like Giriko, the guy with the eye patch, is just spouting a bunch of useless nonsense. And I was like, yo, he just like me for real.
Pythes is confirmed, Giriko.
Yeah. There's a part later on, which I'll spoil it because I think we're about to come up on it.
Yeah.
But Genjo is there and he's thinking to himself, I definitely wrote this down, that he doesn't think he ever asked how Giriko died.
Yeah, I do remember that.
I'm like, that is so sad. It's like they've just been hanging out this whole time, and finally he's like, I don't think I ever asked how he died.
I did write that down too. And I was
so
like,
funny.
I bet he has the most horrific Kenpachi PTSD.
Just wait.
Yeah, he's like, fuck that shit.
You guys haven't seen shit yet. you haven't All right. You haven't gotten to the good part of the book yet.
We're getting there. I'm telling you, if you are so interested in seeing this mystery fight that's about to happen to the Fullbringers, man, you're in for a treat because that's the rest of the book.
God damn it.
That's the rest of the half that we're covering.
Super
simple,
and then holy shit, it's just like, boom.
Yeah, it's crazy. So anything I missed on chapter 6 that you guys want to touch on before we move on?
All I wrote down was getting actual information from Urahara is like getting blood from a stone.
Yep.
He is cagey as fuck.
And they talk about how like when Hisagi's trying to ask him questions, and like there's multiple times where it's like Urahara responds knowing what Hisagi's strategy is, and like he can tell that something bothered Hisagi, and he comments on it.
Yeah.
And every time Hisagi's like, fuck this guy, like I cannot get anything out of him.
I also wrote down that visually, like in my head as I was reading it, it's like I was watching the anime because that's just how my brain works. And anytime they talked about him closing the fan, opening the fan, pressing it to his lips, away, and doing the little fanning thing that he does, I was picturing it perfectly in my head.
I thought one of the parts where I could visualize the best, and I thought they nailed all the characters, was with Genta jumping
when he
in
was being choked
and
tickled with
the hair. I could totally see that in my mind. I was like, yeah, that's great.
They
created that's totally
backstory for being like for her tickling him.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
What the hell?
Yep, great, really good stuff. I could totally, the moment I was reading that, like, I could totally see that in the anime.
Just it. And it'd be done in the style of the anime where it's all kind of like, it's not a traditional Kubo, but then it's drawn all funny.
Yeah.
And Kisuke has his like dumb troll face hidden behind the fan.
Yep.
Like, it's fucking this guy.
It's so good.
And then I didn't put a number on it, but I just wrote that bitch Toki Nada's head of the visual department. Fuck my life.
Okay, chapter 7. We're going straight back to the Rakan guy, and if you didn't hear already, then we find out the woman is none other than Candace Catnip.
Yay.
Wow. And she is referred to as a registered bloodhound of the 12th division now. Hate to see that shit.
It's better than Bambi being a backpack.
Yeah.
True.
Holy fuck. Poor Bambi.
Yeah.
And it's mentioned here that multiple other Sternritters were captured and being used as guinea pigs, and now a zombified version said to be being used by Mary and his carrot on a stick method.
I love that phrasing.
And he says that in this case, Candace has been fed a poisonous carrot. And we go back in time here several days ago to the R&D department, and we see Candace and Mary when they're having their interaction here, and they're going back and forth over Candace cooperating with him. And she states that he won't go down without a fight, and if he tries anything, she'll take down them and Ichigo at the same time. And Mary's like, well, like, that guy left a long time ago. So, and Mary's like, honestly, if Ichigo saw the way you were here, he's so naive that he would complain until you were free. So, and true. Candace is like, fuck it, I'm still not gonna help. And this is where we see Mary begin to kind of bait her with these little poisonous carrots, air quotes. And he mentions that there's a zombie and a glutton girl that have been sneaking around Hueco Mundo, and if she doesn't cooperate, he'll just have to get replacements. And Candace immediately regains a little bit of hope, and Mary says, to think they fought me and didn't expect that I put trackers on both of them. Candace asks about Bambi, and Mary says, yes, the bomb girl is still alive, although, you know, zombified, of course. And Candace asks, if he already has test subjects, why hasn't he just killed the other Sternritters already? Why hasn't he just taken them out? Mary says that they formed a pact with the head captain for a unified front against Yuha Vaha, and Candace can't believe that they would betray Yuha, because she was, like, gone. The moment the Oswald Island happened, she was gone.
Oh, yeah, she was knocked out.
She does recall the feeling of Yuha attempting to steal her powers and thinks of Lil Toto, and immediately thinks, yeah, Lil Toto would probably do that. Like, that makes a lot of sense. And Mary says, if you cooperate in this upcoming battle, I wouldn't be opposed to returning those who've completed their experiments to your fellow Quincy's, which, as we know of Mary, is never going to fucking happen. Not a chance in hell. And we cut to present day, where it is explained that not even Candace believed the words that was coming out of his mouth. And she was hoping to use this as a chance to find Minnie, who had also been captured, and somehow make contact with Lil Toto and Giselle so they can all get out of there. It's mentioned that seeing Genjo block her first electric arrow brought back memories of Ichigo, and she immediately gets fucking upset and made her so mad that she immediately used her electrocution on the Fullbringers, which they state her powers have been reduced since the Oswalin, or the Oshwalin. But it's still stronger than that of, like, a standard lightning, which is still pretty fucking good.
That's insane.
And it's mentioned here, which I thought was interesting, I don't know if I'll expand on later, that Lil Toto knew of Fullbringers. Like, she was one of the only people, and she says that she actually brought them up previously, and she's like, Lil Toto probably know more about these guys. How? Who? Who? Who does she know?
She's just smart. That fucking smart, dude.
Yeah, she, honestly, Lil Toto is referred to multiple times, and it just goes to show she is, like, the fucking smartest person. Mm-hmm. They're constantly like, yeah, most people are, like, unrouting or whatever, but they knew Lil Toto had their back. It was like, damn. Yeah. Like, all right, that's cool.
These books do so much to elevate her as, like, one of the goats. Somehow, she was in, like, 4 chapters of the Blood War, maybe 5, and they're like, yeah, no, we're going to give this one all the screen time.
Yeah, they're like, and she's just the best person, and she's so cool.
She's the smartest.
It's like,
yeah.
It's like, all right, cool, chill. So we see Mary, who is watching them from afar, and says that Candace must have understood the mission as he told her to capture the bodies, and she's trying to incinerate them to dust. And just then a voice speaks out behind Mary, saying that he told her that girl is too brash for this. And Mary immediately presses the button, shocking multiple people who we see are, of course, Charlotte, Lupi, Dordoni, and Tsuruchi all back again. And Dordoni asks, what about the promise for them to meet the Nino? And Mary goes, well, one of the guys down there is a deputy Soul Reaper, just like Ichigo. In fact, Ichigo struck him down with his own blade. And Dordoni says, really? So has he removed his naivety? And he goes, if so, I cannot call him Nino anymore. And Mary continues and says that one of them is also the man who struck down Uryu Ishida. And Tsuruchi says there is no way that Four Eyes would go down so easily. And Mary continues saying they aren't so small fry then, huh? And that's why I brought you guys, just in case you have to suppress any rogue zombie Quincy's and just, you know, have you on deck. Mary looks down as the smoke clears and says, well, if that's just a fraction of the Fullbringer's powers, they've caught my attention. And we go back to Candace to see what happens when the smoke clears. And there's a giant tree that has all of a sudden popped up from the middle and has protected Genjo and absorbed most of the electricity. The tree, of course, is from Tsukishima. If you've not played Bleach Brave Souls, it's a special move. You see it a billion times.
Yep.
And it started when the battle started, he immediately slashed it, raised this gigantic tree that it is today. And Genjo attacks and launches a Getsuga at Candace, who's barely able to survive it. And she recognizes it as Ichigo's attack. And Genjo tells her to make sure to thank Ichigo. She was only able to dodge it because she saw it previously. And while all this is going on, we see that there's another person watching from the shadows. And we see it as none other than Narana, who is also alive and watching. And he has been told by Miri to just observe. Just observe what's going on. And we find out that his technique, the underbelly, he tried to use the technique on Mayuri. And this is the technique that worked on Aizen, by the way.
Oh,
he
that's right. I forgot about this.
Tried to use it on Mayuri, but Mayuri just responded and said it's only natural for someone to change their spiritual pressure every second. And so it wouldn't work. And that's how he found himself in this situation.
Yep.
I like that he tried at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
But I feel like all of the Stern Renders at least gave it a college try to get out of there. And then like, all right, fuck it. Like, I guess we're stuck. We might as well continue on.
It's Mayuri. You can't really. But you try. You give it a shot. Yeah.
So now we go back to Karakura Town because, of course, we're fighting. So we need some narration from Urahara and Hisagi. And Urahara is continuing to explain the Fullbringer's powers to Hisagi. And this is, I cut all of this out. This is all stuff that we already know. Okay. I'll give you a short version. Basically, their mothers are attacked by Hollow while they're still in the womb and they survive. And then those Hollow powers basically come out of them. And Urahara pulls down a whiteboard that already has a whole bunch of things written on it about creating the ultimate demonic soul reaper.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell is that?
So Hisagi asks, he's like, what is that? Like, what did I just see? And he erases it because Urahara was embarrassed that didn't have a cool name yet, like Karakura Riser. And so Hisagi is like immediately looking at it. He's like, does that have anything to do with like what happened with Yodoichi? And he thinks back to after the Thousand Year Blood War, he said that Yodoichi was running around Soul Society asking if anybody saw her battle. And anybody who was foolish enough to say yes, she pummeled them until their memory was gone, which is Thunder God Yodoichi. You know,
yes.
We know how.
Oh,
know how
my God. I wish I would have been there.
Dude, I was cracking the fuck up when I read that.
So funny.
So Yodoichi was able to remember everything she did during that.
Yeah. She just wasn't in control.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah. Urahara, continuing on, just not mentioning anything. He says, that he's actually been aware of Fullbringers for quite some time. And he's like, so don't you think it's odd that if I was aware of him, that someone in the past thousands of years of Soul Reaper history wouldn't have noticed it before me? And he says, except any proof of that has been removed from the archives. He says, well, it's normally just for Soul Reaper matters. So of course they're not going to keep them in there. And Urahara's like, well, what about the visual department? Hisagi stops and says, then the Fullbringers have a connection with the Suniyashiro family. And Urahara responds, well, that sounds like a job for a Soul Reaper investigator with a backbone. And he says, heaven forbid, the small chance that he's wrong, he doesn't want to make a guess. You know, he doesn't want to make a quick little say. And Hisagi thinks, full aware that Urahara is probably taking advantage of him here to go and investigate this stuff. But then Urahara says, the info you gave about Hikone is actually a great starting point for him. Hisagi asks if he thinks Hollows would be amused to see humans with similar powers as them. And Urahara thinks of the Arrancars that he knows and says, well, there has been, it'll have to be case by case, but there does seem to be a rise of thoughtful Arrancars these days. As we go back to the Rukongai, and the giant tree Tsukushima made is now being fucked up, and we see it thrown as Minnie is here, which is P the power, just so we're keeping track.
Power.
And she is ready to fight as well. So she's part of the crew, and just then we see the tree is caught by none other than Giriko, who's now in his fucking Hulk form. And this is where we get the note from Genjo, where he's like, man, I don't think I ever asked how he died. Like, he sees how strong Giriko is, like, how did he die? And we all know he got one-shotted by Kenpachi. That's a fucking hate to see it. It's also noted here that Minnie P the power was estimated to have enough power to take down Kenpachi by herself.
Yeah, when they said that, she had that much raw strength.
Yep, which is a fucking psych, but like, okay.
I just said physical strength, not combat ability.
Yeah.
So Giriko and Minnie begin to just trade fucking blows, and Genjo is deflecting arrows from Candace, and Genjo is like, this battle is going to be totally cool, totally chill, and they're basically just going to stall until Tsukushima can find his time to insert himself into one of their paths, and then they will use that to find out what their motive is as well. But just then Genjo senses a strong presence coming as though ridiculing the fight itself. Mary gets a radio report of a Garganta opening, and Mary immediately is able to tell that this is not the, quote, plaything of the four great noble houses, but a genuine Arrancar. And we see a white silhouette bolting through Soul Society to their exact location, and it says he is going so fast that he's basically destroying any boulder or tree that they're fighting with into fucking smithereens, when all of a sudden a blue-haired beast stopped dead center of the fight. And it's Grimjo.
That's my boy.
Grimjo is there, and he says, I came here because I felt the presence of something mixed, but it ended up being neither of them. Grimjo then turned to Genjo, who he quickly surmised the strongest of the bunch, and said, you better tell that kid Hikone that I came to finish what that little brat started. And that's the end of chapter 7. It's kind of interesting to note that they talk about the Fullbringer powers, and they're fucking broken. You know, and I feel like anybody would go with the strategy that the Fullbringers have. We'll stall. Tsukushima, all he's got to do is become his friend and we win. Like, yeah, it's exactly. Fucking game over. Like, anybody that has compassion of any kind.
But I do like when they mentioned Byakuya.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be later. That'll be later with Byakuya. But yeah, Exactly. The downfall with Byakuya. And love the shit with Urahara. Basically baiting Hisagi to go check into the Sunishiro family. Once again, politics stuff that's being brought up where he's like, yeah, don't you think like someone would have noticed 1,000 years ago? Yeah, like, I'm not the guy who made the original things, you know? And he's like, okay, yeah, that's a good point. Great point.
I like a lot of the dialogue between Mayuri and Candace, especially, I don't know why I thought it was hilarious. She's like, I'm a gentleman among these people. I would never hurt a woman.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the fuck you would.
Yep. And I think at one point he's even like, you know, I just have so much love in my heart that I would be willing to release those people.
Yeah. And I'm like, sure. I just picture him with that grin he makes when he's got like the feral look on.
Yep. Such a shithead to the end of time. Just fucking so hilarious. Bad.
I love him.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote down both of those quotes. So here they are. He says, I'm known as a prominent gentleman around here, so I would hate to rough up a lady. He says in his introduction, kicking the shit out of his daughter.
Yep.
Then it says, I am someone who is known to have love running in his veins instead of blood.
Mm-hmm.
And I also said, Mayuri believes his own shit.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. And then I also put Charlotte makes the grand return, and I love it.
Yeah. And he also mentions in that time where he's having his beef with Candace is like he's actually finished dissecting the Quincy's all that stuff years ago. Like he's not really interested in you guys anymore. Like he's been there, done that. He said he was kind of interested with like the Stern Ritter, and like he referred to them as the pure-blooded Quincy's.
Yeah.
But like you guys lost a lot of those powers now. So
he's like, you guys are kind of like meh now.
Yeah.
If he had gotten them like pre-Ishwalan, he'd probably be a little interested still.
Oh, yeah. He would have been way happier. It's like basically dissecting and figuring out how like this blood can give them special powers and how it returns back. But he's like, yeah, you guys are already fucking like a bum. We are already wasted.
Also, I like the part where when Urahara is explaining like the Foldbringers and stuff like that, he does mention Chad and Orihime.
Yeah.
And them maybe being a little bit different. And
yeah.
Pythes, correct me if I'm wrong, but he says it's because they were exposed to the Hogyoku.
Yeah,
he says so because they asked like, oh well, like how did they get their powers? Because I think it's Sasagi was like, wasn't it because they were close to Hogyoku? He's like, kinda, like that's involved. It's just also their origin story was a little bit different, but same origin of the power, you know, like, so it's interesting.
It's like they were both attacked by Hollows, but like way after they were born. But you know, Hogyoku be like some crazy dumb magic shit.
I mean, Orihime's god.
Oh my god, her powers are so fucking broken.
Chad can just take out people in a building.
Yeah, okay, well, Chad's a terrorist, so. Yeah, so. Yeah.
Who cheats in the world of boxing now.
Well, it's not confirmed.
Yes, it is. No real human has a chance against Chad, let's be honest.
That's true. The man stopped a beam from crushing, I think, who was it, like kids or something?
Yeah, and this was before he had powers.
Yep.
So when Candace is reminiscing on when she was abducted, she says she was taken by a lady named Toru, T-O-R-U-E. And I was like, who the fuck is that? So she's the lady that captured Cone and brought him to be experimented on in Squad 12. And that's how we get Buff Cone.
And
I only noted her because her ability is that her titty extends like a whip and she used it to smack him in the face.
Wait, her what?
The fuck?
Her titty, it extends like a whip or a tentacle and smacks Cone in the face.
All right.
If you would like to Google that, it's there.
I trust you.
Yeah.
It was in the anime, and I wrote Charlotte is here. Exclamation mark. And in order to muddle the waters further, the book calls Charlotte a she.
Oh, that's right. The book does call her a she.
Scandalous.
I do like that we get Dordoni's full name.
Yeah.
Dordoni Alessandro del Socasio.
That's a beautiful, weird. Jose. Beautiful. That's a really weird way to say Don Panini.
Yeah, I did write that too. I'm like, we got Don Panini's real name.
There's just some dialogue where like, Cerucci and Dordoni are talking in the background, and it just says, meanwhile, a short distance away, Charlotte was posing for mysterious reasons.
I do love that. I just picture her going like this and doing all the like classic poses.
I'm just gonna swap back and forth between he and she for Charlotte.
It was
meant to be done, apparently.
I really like that Dordoni comments on Ichigo killing Genjo.
Yeah.
Yep. He's not a boy anymore.
Because that was one of the things that he was doing when they originally fought. Is remember, Dordoni just wanted Ichigo to use his full power, and Ichigo kept trying not to use it over and over again. And it wasn't until he used the Hollow Mask where Dordoni was like, okay, good.
He's like, you can't be naive like this anymore, kid. You're in Wakamundo. And he was then naive, and he got his shit rocked by Ukiura.
Yep, true.
Dordoni was right. And, oh, yeah. This is a stupid note. I wrote Candace gets cucked by a tree.
Candace's weakness? A tree.
A tree.
I wrote Karakura Riser is canon. And then just how to make the perfect demonic soul reaper. What the fuck is Urahara cooking?
Maybe we'll get in the Hellverse. Or, yeah, Hell Arc.
Oh, yeah. I was looking up who another character was, and one of the recommended articles was just Bounce Invasion, and I was like, oh,
let's
yeah,
let's go,
and Bounce Invasion, you say?
Yes, maybe that could be used in some kind of court trial, just saying.
Maybe,
if only it was the great Bounce defense of 2023.
That'll go down in history. I hope someone tells Kubo that. And then I had to look it up, because they mentioned that a Giriko grows to 5 meters, and I'm like, I can't. I only use freedom units. So he is now 16 feet tall.
Jesus, that's okay. What? Damn.
Yeah, that was what the conversion told me. If somebody knows different, comment it. One last thing. It was Namu mentioned Candace fighting, and now Grimmjow showing up, a Jose eating good. And that's the end of the notes for that chapter.
All right. Chapter 8. We immediately go to Las Noches, and we see Las Noches has Halibut, has Nell, has Rudebone, has all the favorite people there, and they are all wondering where the fuck Grimmjow went. And they're all debating on if he fucked off to the real world or Soul Society, and why he would do that if he's supposed to be like an animal and basically guard his turf in Wekumundo. And Halibut says that the little kid that invaded also has her worried, more specifically that Zanpakuto toe that they used. And that's all we get for that short little interaction there. We'll come back to them later. We go to Soul Society now, and Shinji feels this tremendous spiritual pressure arrive and recalls feeling this back in Karakura Town. Momo says that she's contacted the R&D department, and they responded to it. That's like, don't fucking worry about it. We're just testing something over there. Mm-hmm. No biggie. And sure. Shinji immediately is like, that is the biggest load of crock that I've ever heard. And he's like, I'm going to head over there. And then he tells Momo to go ahead and report this to the head captain. Loopy senses Grimmjow and immediately jumps towards the battle zone. He's like, oh, yeah, that motherfucker. And the other Ronker call him out, like, saying, like, don't go, you're going to get a shock. And nothing happens. They're like, oh, what the fuck? Like me. And they look over to Miri, and he's like, you know what? I, too, am interested why that Ronker is here and wants to know how the Fullbringers and the Quincy's will react to multiple Ronker in the mix as well. And he actually invites the rest of them, like, hey, if you guys want to go down there, too.
It's always an experiment for him.
Mm-hmm. He's like, be my guest. And Charlotte is like, no, Grimmjow is too crude. No, thank you.
Yeah.
And Mary thinks Grimmjow was last working with Urahara. And he's like, he's not pulling the strings here, is he? And that's when we go back to the Urahara shop, of course. And we find out here that Hisagi is just a straight up racist. And Urahara asks if he still has contacts with the Arrancar who helped him in the war. And Urahara is like, you know, the Arrancars have thoughts and feelings of their own also, my boy. And he's like, whether or not it's a case of their thousands of souls coming together to make one, or one strong soul taking over the others, that means that there's always a chance for negotiations, because there's, you know, so many different opinions mm-hmm. and souls in there. And Urahara senses that Hisagi is still basically thinking about Tozen when he mentions this, and tells him that the possibility of saving him or not being the right person for the job is a waste of time, as you were there, you did what you had to do. And just as Hisagi's thinking of what it was about Tozen that he wants to uphold, and basically how it's Tozen's teachings that he truly values, he sees Urahara suddenly holding his cane Zanpakuto, looking out into the distance, and he asks Hisagi if he came prepared for Gintei Kaijo. Hisagi explains that, you know, he's under Gintei Kaijo, we already knew that, he entered the real world, and he has under 20% of his power currently. Hisagi attempts to tempt if anybody's outside of the shop, but he can't.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite. Wondersuite.
Find anybody so he doesn't know what Urahara is basically reacting to. And Hisagi asks, like, are they surrounding the shop? And Urahara says, no, something is surrounding Karakura Town. And we go to a certain place in the Sarate. We see Tokinata, that bitch.
That
Tokinata.
Fucking bitch.
I was about to say.
He's watching the battle happen in the Rukangai and calls, a, basically makes a phone call using a candle to Hakone. And he explains that his earlier loss in Wakamundo was all part of his plan. And he failed perfectly, is what he says. And that he needed the defeat to grow. Hakone basically keeps apologizing to Tokinata and is like telling him, like, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm not going to fail you this time. Don't worry about it. And basically, it's mentioned that Tokinata, every time he speaks to Hakone, he is speaking in a nice, nurturing voice as of like talking to a little kid, but he's smiling menacingly the whole time as if he's toying with a little small animal.
Like Joker.
And it just doesn't come across because it only does voice on the candle. So, like, he has no idea. And we hear another voice chime in on the candle telling Tokinata that if you think you're equal to this brat, you haven't even put a shred of thought to it. We find out the voice is that of the Zanpakuto, Iko Mikodomoe. And Hakone immediately like pulls it away, apologizes to Lord Tokinata. And Tokinata's like, no, that's fine. Like, all good. Don't worry about it. It's all part of growing with the Zanpakuto. And it will take time because your Zanpakuto that you're using is just like the one that I have that's passed down to the Tokinata family, or Nanao Zanpakuto, the mirror sword that is also passed down. He says the only person that would even wield it aside from you would be Ichigo or perhaps Ginjo.
Ooh,
and speaking of, there's an Espada over there fighting. He's like, you want to go fuck him up? You want to go over there and like see
go
what's
redeem
up?
Yourself,
yeah.
Kid.
And Hikone's like, oh yeah, like I won't fail you this time. And Tokinata extinguishes the candle basically. And so Tokinata's not thinking of like how lovely Hakone is and what a nice little boy or person he is. And he's like, this is actually going really well for the Zanpakuto that he's using. And he looks to another monitor, and we see it's Karakura Town. He says, oh, so they're making their move on Karakura Town to seize the Jirachi? And he says that this is the only time they can do that with Ichigo being out of town.
Of course.
Yeah. So they're all playing around the goat. That's how it goes. We go to the first company barracks here for a quick little exchange, and Kiraka gets a report from Momo, and he tells Okihiba, who is actually the second lieutenant, correctly this time, and he says like, yo, go relay this information to the squad too, survey corps, make sure, and if you need to, you're allowed to use my name, like use my name to get this shit done, like get it going. And he thinks back to Yama and all the shitty decisions that Yama made throughout the years, but he's thinking about like how Yama must have been shouldering the weight of every decision he made every day, and how Yama was the relay between the real world and the Soul Society, and how much stress and, you know, pressure that was. And he thinks of how Yama must have felt during executing or ordering the execution of Rukia and ordering how to treat Orihime as a traitor for going to Wakamundo, etc., etc. So Kiraku's kind of like, fuck, what did I get myself into? Like, this is a lot of fucking pressure. And we go back to the Urahara shop here for the last little bit of chapter 8, and Urahara is informing Hisagi like, oh yeah, did I not mention Ichigo's gone? And Hisagi's like, what the fuck? And he's like, yeah, you know, his sisters were gone on a trip. Then his dad got word that they were in trouble. So he grabbed Ichigo and they fucked off. And, you know, as a matter of fact, actually his friends went, and so did Rukia and Renji. They all left.
I like how they write all the main characters off. They're like, well, yep, they're all going on a little trip.
Yeah. And Urahara's like, I was going to go too, but I just like promised to have an interview with you. And Hisagi's like, oh, is it my fault that this is happening? He's like, I feel so bad. And Urahara's like, nah, I'm just fucking around. Like, I was going to stay anyways. Like, I kind of got the feeling that it was a little too convenient for of them to be called off to go do something. And it's then revealed that basically Urahara's walking out to the patio to go see what's going on. And we see the TV turn on, and it's the voice of a young boy coming through, very quickly revealed to be Yukio, who we all know and love is one of the other Fullbringers. And Urahara's like, Yukio's like, I'm sure you knew it was me already by the confinement. You know? And Urahara's like, oh, yeah, like any other compliments you want to throw my way? Like, of course I knew it was you. And Yukio is like, annoyed at Urahara at this point, and Urahara's like, why don't you just tell me like what the reason is, just save us all a bunch of time. And Yuki just goes, I have my reasons. And that's it. That's the end of chapter 8 right there. So he says that the way that Urahara should know it was him was by the way Karakura Town was being basically sealed off from the rest of the world,
surrounded.
Well, I
liked a lot of like the interactions that just happened early on, especially with like Halibut and Nell talking about, God damn it, Grimmjow's gone. Yeah. Where the fuck is this guy?
And I like they're like comparing him to like a fucking watchdog. They're like, dude, isn't he like a panther? Does he have like animal instincts? Is he supposed to like stay on his turf? Like, where's he going?
Yeah, like what the hell, man? Mm-hmm. You're supposed to protect.
Yep. it's like really interesting stuff to basically see how these other characters, it further insinuates that relationship between Nell and Grimmjow, where it's like Nell constantly has to go retrieve Grimmjow and has to go do this.
And she's his handler.
Yeah, basically. And I like Shinji is getting slowly introduced into the story, where we saw him at the very tail end of volume one, and now he's getting a little bit more proactive. He's getting in there. He has a little bit more moments later. And of course, the Hisagi and Urahara interaction are just continuing through the whole fucking book. Just the whole book.
It's just so good.
Yeah, it's just like, how would you know? You basically need to take one character who is literally a journalist just trying to figure out what's going on, who's going to ask all of the fucking questions, and then Urahara, who has all of the fucking answers for anything you could ever imagine. It's like, you can't ask for a better lore dump.
He won't give you a straight answer, though.
Yeah, true.
I love that aside from Shinji, everybody since Grimmjow, and they were like, yeah, that's a Squad 12 experiment, and everybody just like, yeah, it seems like
disregards
something
it.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, that's something my Yuri would do. Not even going to question it. Let's just ignore it and go drink tea.
And also to note that it's literally in the Rukon guy. They're just like, yeah, fuck it. We're going to have our experiment out here. Don't mind that. This is just normal. Fuck the poor people.
They have a little conversation where Shuhei mentions he wants to protect Tosin's teachings. He doesn't regret killing Tosin, but Tosin had been a teacher and a guide for him. And he's worried that should he change, that he and Tosin's teachings might be changed, and he's worried about that. And then I wrote, fuck that bitch, Tokinata number 6.
What deserved the number 6?
Oh, this is when he was talking to Hikone, and they're like, he's fucking with an animal.
Yeah.
I hate Tokinata so much.
And we get an interaction coming up in the next chapter where I just was like getting the interaction with Hikone, and I was like, he's so lovable.
I know.
He's just a kid. Just like, just, hey, what's up? I'm going over here. Like, just happy to be here.
Optimistic about everything.
Like, he should be in sneakers in a cul-de-sac trying to get jawbreakers and shit. But instead, he's like, I got to go become a king. Let's fight. I love the description of Shunsui's, like, the fucking weight of being in the position that Yama was in. This shit's fucking rough, dude.
He did mention at one point that, to be fair, Yama was too serious. And I'm like, that is true. Yeah,
that is 100%
true. That is way true. Because, like, you know, a lot of decisions, he's like, how did he feel about this? He even asked, how did he feel when he had to draw his Amakuto on us? Like, me and Ukitake.
Oh, that's right.
It's like, yeah, every decision he made was shitty. Like, I'm sorry. That just further reiterates for me. Yama made the shittiest decisions ever.
I wrote in the book, it just says, old man Yama was way too serious after all. He might have been prepared every day of his life for what was to come. Beneath what had seemed to be callous decisions, there had likely been hundreds of thousands of other choices. Kyoraku had come to represent the very thing those choices had protected. He smiled painfully as his reverence for his mentor continued to grow even deeper.
I don't know why. It's, he chose the shittiest option every time. So.
So he knows what to do better, or like what's the better choice?
He saw what Yama did, and he's like, I can do that better.
Yeah, this is why presidents are only on 2 terms. Look how shitty the decisions got from Yama.
How long was Yama in power?
Like 1,000 years.
Right?
Yeah.
Almost exactly 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Think about all the fucked up political corruption that's going on. Think about my Yuri doing Dr. Mengele-esque shit, and he's just letting it happen. And then I wrote, Ichigoat being out of town is a fantastic reason as to why he can't just solve the problem.
Yep. It's true. And they mention that because he's out of town with his family, he doesn't have any, like, Soul Reaper gear to come back. Because it's like, how long is it going to take him to come back? It could be like 3 days, like, yeah, when we come back.
And I wrote down, I like to imagine he's just off having a filler arc.
It's another beach episode.
You know what? It is another beach episode. Where's Rangiku? They're off at the beach.
True.
Mm-hmm. Ichigo gets his vacation finally. And that's the end of those notes. There's some shit I can't wait to talk about next chapter.
All right. Hey, let's get into it. Chapter 9. This is the last chapter we're going to be covering for this episode, boys. Thank you guys for hanging out. We go to the Rukon guy immediately. And Grimmjow wastes no time and attacks Ginjo and Tsukishima. Tsukishima actually manages to nick Grimmjow in this initial interaction, and he answers him into his past. And Grimmjow, just like Byakuya, still attacks. And Tsukishima's like, okay. And he mentions that unlike Byakuya, this seems to be off of pure animal instincts overriding it. As someone who wants to murder him already will continue to want to murder him even though he's entered in this past. And Ginjo launches a Getsuga at Grimmjow, and he too manages to barely dodge it. And he's like, Are you from the same tribe as Ichigo?
I do like that phrase.
Genjo is like, fuck, dog. It's either a small world or Ichigo gets the fuck around. Like, what's happening? And Candy and Minnie are watching this fight, and they're like, man, what would Lil Toto do here? Like, what, I do what like would Lil Toto do in this fight? And the two surmise that basically Tsukishima must have an ability like Pepe, and wonder if Mayuri knew that before sending them in. And Loopy suddenly appears behind them and is like, guys, listen, nobody fuck with the Panther except for me. Like, I'm going to take down Grimmjow. And he immediately unleashes his Resurrection and goes strangle Trepidora. And Grimmjow senses another Hollow's power and wonders if somebody had followed him from Weko Mundo. He tries to recall, but as his mantra is survival of the fittest, he does not remember those spiritual pressures of those who he has defeated. And on instinct alone, Grimmjow jumps away from Grimmjow and launches a Sarah with all of his strength up at it. And it's mentioned here that even though Animal Instinct would tell him not to show his, like, weak side to the enemy, which is Genjo and Tsukishima, he was, like, so caught back by whatever was happening up there, like, he just did it. He's, like, overrode it.
Yeah, he turned his back.
Mm-hmm. And he says, just then, a power that probably shares the same roots as Acero shoots down, but it was strong enough to warp the existence of the space itself it cuts through. Grimmjow had managed to sway out of the way, and then he recognized the spiritual pressure as none other than Loopy. And it said that Grimmjow looked both exasperated and annoyed.
I love that. I could just see his face being like, oh.
Yeah, and Genjo asks Tsukishima how Tsukishima was able to dodge it so quickly. And he's like, well, now that I answer myself into Grimmjow's past, like, I know a lot about the Arrancar and the Espada. And he says that what we just witnessed was a Grand Ray Cerro coming from up above. And Grimmjow launched a regular Cerro at Loopy. And now they're fighting again. Grimmjow launched another Cerro at him. And Loopy just smacks it away. He's like, that's a weak Cerro. Like, what the fuck are you doing? But Grimmjow used the cover of the Cerro to Sonido away. And Loopy immediately remembers the dying to Grimmjow using a similar, like, attack that he did. And so Loopy immediately goes into defensive position off of instinct of what happened previously. And then PTSD. He realizes that Grimmjow knew he was going to have that PTSD and used it to get close to him and launched another, this time Grimmjow launching it, a Grand Ray Cerro at Loopy, basically enveloping him whole. And Genjo and the Fullbringers discuss the game plan as this whole thing is going on. Like, should we just leave? Like,
I love the discussion. We're like, maybe we should back off, right? It's like, good idea.
It doesn't seem like they have anybody, like, getting ready to jump us or anything like that. We could probably just go. But then Genjo senses two more people rapidly heading this way. One is Soul Reaper, and one he thinks Ichigo, possibly. And Grimmjow, seeing Loopy has actually survived the Grand Race Arrow, which is a blast that would have normally killed him back in the day, he now notices the stitches all over his body and immediately notes that those aren't scars from battle and are probably something that Xyloparo did himself while he was alive. And he mentions that even Urahara himself did something similar to himself. And he's like, oh, okay, interesting.
He remembers things. Yeah,
and Loopy is like saying how happy he is that Grimmjow is still his same old self, because now it makes him feel as though he's been reborn. And now we move over to a certain place in the Soul Society, and we see Sanji. He is on his way to where the clusterfuck is happening, and he senses this other spiritual pressure also coming. He is on the way there, and I thought this was interesting. I wrote this down very specifically. He is thinking of his previous battle with Grimmjow, and he says that he will probably be fine if he just puts his hollow mask back on.
Thank you.
So all I got to say is clearly he could have used it.
He could have used it at any point during against the Quincy's.
This is directed specifically to Kage. I hope you fucking watch this. You bitch have told me for years, oh, they banned it in the Soul Society. They banned it in the Soul Society. And here's Shinji, first sign of Grimmjow in the Soul Society. I'll just rip on the hollow mask. Don't worry about it. This will just be like good old times.
I'm going to come to Kage's defense. It was widely spread on forums that Yama had banned the Hollow Mask, but it was never said anywhere canon, and people just took that as word of God.
Well, I mean, Yama's gone, so...
Yeah, and Shinji, yeah. First sign, he said it over there, I'm just going to whip on the Hollow Mask. I should be able to take these guys off, no problem.
Toss it on, play the old school music with the super cool intro.
The jazz.
With the jazz, yeah.
The best entrance.
Bastards. As Shinji's doing this on his way there, he senses that other spiritual pressure, and then he turns around to run into Hikone, who is on his way to the battle as well, and he talks to Hikone, and he's like, hey, like, so, like, what's up? Like, who are you? Like, what's your name? And Hikone is just, like, answering each one, just like, hey, I'm Hikone.
So
like,
casual about it, too. Yeah.
And so happy, and each time that he responds, Shinji's like, thinking, what the fuck is this kid saying? Like, what is he saying? And he's like, yeah, I'm Lord Tokunaga's retainer, I'm gonna be King of Weko Mundo, then I'm gonna be the Reo, and each time he answers, Shinji's like, this kid's not normal. Like, what is happening here? He goes, like, what have I gotten myself into? He's like, this is clearly the eye of the storm, and this isn't any good to be here. And Shinji asks, like, are you a boy? Are you a girl? And he's like, actually, I don't have any reproductive parts. And he says that Tokunaga said I didn't need it because I'm both the beginning and the end. So what's the point? And Shinji notes that he is full on sprinting and moving at top speed to get to the place he's going. And Hikone just looks like he's out for a jog, just having a good time, just not breaking a sweat or anything like that. And both of them continue going to this location where everything's going down. And Shinji's just like, how the hell am I going to deal with the situation when I get there? Like, this is so fucked up.
I love how he says, and I think the quote is, how do I always draw the short end of the stick?
Yeah. Shinji's just like, fuck this. Like, this fucking sucks. He fought the first time, like, oh, it's just Graham Joe. I'll go over there. And he's like, what is happening? Who is this kid? And he's even like, you have, like, a Soul Reaper uniform on, but you're not a Soul Reaper. It's just a garb that Tokunaga gave me. You know, Tokunaga's retainer. It's like, jeez.
I love that, like, the whole conversation is just Shinji getting more and more exasperated by anything Hikone says.
Yeah, but he's... I think they describe it as he gets a chill on his spine the minute he was like, oh, I'm supposed to be the Reo.
Lovely. Yes, we go back to the Rukan guy, and Lupi is thinking of how when he was revived, he had this thirst. And at first he thought the thirst would kind of disappear by him killing Hitsugaya. But then when he had the opportunity to fight Hitsugaya, he was already zombified, so he felt nothing. Then he saw Rengiku, and it's mentioned that he once thought Rengiku had a kicking body. And even though his interest didn't change... He felt nothing. She was already zombified as well. He didn't have anything. And he was left thinking day to day, like, what is the meaning of my life? Like, what is there to do if I feel this way? And it wasn't until Grimmjow reappeared in front of him that all the thirst disappeared. And instead, he felt dread and hatred for Grimmjow and a joy for finding a new thing to destroy. Lupi begins to spin his tentacles around and launches Saros from each tentacle. And it says that he starts to steal Grimmjow's technique of using his own blood to strengthen each Saro. And then Grimmjow says, grind Pantera, and we cut away from that to Hueco Mundo. Here we see Halibo and Nell, and they are on their way to the Soul Society. Halibo is going to go negotiate with them over something, and Nell is to retrieve Grimmjow while she's doing that. Halibo thinks that the Soul Reaper kid thinks of the Soul Reaper kid and comments that the kid may become a bigger problem than even you have not dealt with. And Lil Toto and Giselle are still watching this as happening, and they're kind of figuring out, should we go with them? Where are they going? Are they in the real world? Are they going to the Soul Society? Like, what's happening? And they decide basically that they're going to wait, they're going to bide their time, and then they'll let loose and find a way to reconnect with Candy and Minnie. The last part of Chapter 9 that we're going to touch on, we go to the First Company Barracks. We see Kiraku here, and he's headed out to the Gilded Seal Aristocrat Assembly to dig around a bit more. And Kiraku begins to reminisce about Ukitake, and he's saying that Ukitake was always more of a people person than him, and that actually him, Tokunaga, and Kiraku all graduated from the same class, and that Tokunaga never stood out. He never got scolded by, you know, Yama. He never got a good grades or anything like that. He was basically like a shadow. And he says that even after the incident, which is, you know, Tokunaga killing his wife, Ukitake still believed that Tokunaga would eventually confront the darkness in his heart and turn around. And at this point, he's kind of reminiscing of if that's true, if you know, Ukitake really had that in him. And Okihiba returns and says that something has surrounded Karakura Town. And at this time, Kiraku's like, what the fuck? And
he's like, shit's hitting the fan.
Yep. And so he's thinking, of course, classic reaction, which if you've known anything from this whole novel, he's like, fuck, Tokunaga may have gotten the jump on us. It's like immediately it's Tokunaga's fault. Like, which we kind of know it's not, right? Because Tokunaga's watching the surveillance cameras and he's like, oh, they're making a move. Like, so some other entity making a move here.
Is it not Tokunaga's fault, Sam?
No, we never blame Tokunaga. He's a sweet angel.
He's just a bystander.
Yeah,
never does anything wrong.
He would never do anything wrong, ever.
He was annulled. He was never found guilty. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I don't know why we're slinging that around. Was OJ guilty?
No, he was not. He was not found
Thank
guilty.
You. Thank you, Jose.
Later on, he was about something else.
Tokunaga is going to release a book. I didn't do it, but had I done it or whatever.
Yeah.
Had I murdered my wife and my associate, this is how I would have done it.
I hate how good the comparison is. I was like, all right, we're just going to go with this. Oh, no, wait, this actually works. Hold on. Sam's on to something.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, Tokunaga has not done anything. Let me recount what he's done so far. He has won. A bunch of assassins tried to kill him, and he protected himself.
That he hired himself.
Yeah. He protected himself
allegedly.
And
yeah, sorry.
It was only sadly after they murdered his family. He tried so hard to stop that, and it was only after they murdered his family, and then now he's got to take on the burden of the Sunishiro family, the complete burden.
Poor guy.
He's taken in a young kid with no private parts and completely raising this kid up, okay? And he gets him health care, make sure he gets healed all the time. He has a fatherly bond with him. He's got his cell phone for him, basically. He's got a pet. Yeah. I mean, no, Jose. No, he don't got pet. He don't got a pet.
Ico Mico Domo?
No.
Okay, no pet.
We don't. That's not in the official biography. You don't know pet.
That is racist, Jose. How dare you?
Thank you. Yeah. Another Hisagi sitting right next to me over here, this fucking guy. So Toki Nada, on the books, has not done anything illegal. That's all I can say.
Sam, you've been to Jose's house, right? Does he have does he have a pointy hood hanging up in a closet somewhere?
I did see one actually.
To further that on,
I saw an electric guitar. I saw a motorcycle. I saw all these things. It's looking real Hisagi for this guy over here.
69 is just a cool number, dude.
So listen, free my boy Tokunaga is all I got to say. So he's not done anything.
You should get that shirt made into a shirt. Free Tokunaga.
Tokunaga did nothing wrong.
All right. If the sword sheath fits, you must acquit. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. Damn.
That's true. That's true. Oh,
hold on. It didn't fit, guys. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, Toki Nada's Zanpakuto toe was taken from him. He was protecting himself valiantly.
Yeah. And he had to wield the family heirloom sword to protect himself. Like a thing that's passed down from generation to generation, which is truly a tragedy.
As he would tell you, they don't tend to like people that they're not grown to. He had to fight without magic powers.
Yeah, I mean, it's truly a tragedy. And I think the people out here that are clowning on a humble man such as Toki Nada, they don't really know him, you know. And who are we?
It's so sad to judge him.
Are any of us truly a better judge of character than Ukitake himself?
What a great judge of character. Kaien could definitely take that all by
himself. I was trying not to laugh, damn it.
Kaien totally had that fight.
Yeah.
He should have won.
I mean, he honestly should have won. So it's Kaien fucking fumbled the bag. I don't know what he was doing.
The refs were not on his side.
I mean, listen, if I was the Four Noble Houses, I too would have kicked the Shiba family out after seeing that. Like, he lost to a rando. Like, sorry, Kaien, you're out.
No, Rukia, don't get involved. I'm also not going to get involved.
Yeah, it was like, I could probably release my spiritual pressure and crush this hollow, but nobody get involved, please.
You don't understand. I have gift baskets of candy to send to Toshiro later.
So, anything in Chapter 9 that I missed that you guys want to discuss on before that's it?
So, at one point, Tsukushima just calls Grimmjow mid.
We love that.
That's disrespect. He's going to die.
Well, he already did. He's going to die again.
He's going to get reborn.
Candace and Mineus just called Little Toto a strategist, and I was like, yeah, that makes sense. At one point, Shinji perfectly described the Sunny-Ashiro family. He said, the four great noble houses hold absolute power. Not all of them are open-hearted like Yoruichi or loyal like Byakuya. Among them, the Sunny-Ashiro family was like all the negative aspects rolled into one. And I was like, what the fuck? Toshin's backstory is public knowledge.
Oh, yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
Because like, even Urahara, which I guess I'm not surprised that Urahara knew what it was. But
Batman always knows what's up.
Almost everybody knows of this backstory. Like, it must be very famous.
That's something you think would, like, he would only tell to those closest to him or if he's trying to get him to work for him for Aizen. But they're just like, yeah, no, this is what happened. Fuck Toki Nada.
I mean, who do you think is the gossip queen that got that around? So it has to be someone close to Tozen.
Toki Nada.
Yeah, I was going to say Toki Nada.
Toki Nada was bragging the other. So, yeah, this fucking poor ass blind kid came up to me the other day. I fucking crushed his throat, that bitch.
Stomped on him.
Yeah. He would. Wait, sorry. No, he wouldn't. Toki Nada's innocent.
Yes. Correct.
Yeah,
Thank you.
Thank allegedly.
You. Correct the record.
Yeah.
Allegedly. This was all in his book.
Allegedly, yep. Though, this was allegedly in his book.
If that had happened, he would have done that and crushed his throat.
Yeah.
Well, since Jose and I read up to chapter 10, I need to make sure that this passage I want to read is not chapter 10 and therefore and 9 instead.
Jose, did you finish chapter 10?
No, I got like 7 or 8 pages into it.
Oh, okay.
Because I was reading it at work when Sam sent that. I'm like, 9 it is.
Okay. Well,
I had to get back to work.
Well, I just checked. It is in Chapter 9, but Sam, you did a good job summarizing Loopy's feelings.
Oh, thank you.
Which, I really like that. I kind of fucking vibe with him more.
Yeah, but it is interesting, but it's still like from an evil point of view. He's like, it really is. I didn't have anything I wanted to fuck up. And it's like, he starts questioning himself. Like, I felt really empty and really sad. Like, I didn't know what I was going to do with myself. And then Grimmjow appeared.
He's like,
and then
perfect.
It was all back to me, baby. My self-confidence
came
back.
It's the mojo.
Back.
It came
yeah,
back.
Yeah.
Like that shit kind of hit hard. Cause I think at one point all of us have felt listless and like we just lose all our motivation.
Not me. Can't relate. I'm not really? A bitch.
Okay, fine. I guess
survival of the fittest.
I guess that's me with all of the mental problems. OCD sucks. I'm just
hey man. I know a doctor slash scientist who might be able to give you some drugs to help you out with that.
Do you think he can take like? Okay, so I have this magic sword, right, with like a ghost in it. Do you think he can give that ghost a sex change?
Yeah,
definitely. You know, there are two customers, mm-hmm. or maybe one.
I mean, listen, get a sex change, and then if you want an electric guitar that also works as a sheath, I got a guy for you.
Really? Okay, can you give me a mm-hmm, number? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no problem.
He's got a candy shop, too.
Yep, exquisite candy.
Now, I only trust people who are trusted by the nicest man in the world, Toki Nada. Do you think he would recommend them?
Yeah, I think so. 100%. I think so in a heartbeat. I mean, how could you not?
I mean, the man, he does his job so well. He just keeps an eye on everything.
Absolutely. And dude, there are some fucking killer notes that I cannot talk about because it's next chapter. Know that Hisagi, just some shit goes down. It's so fucking funny.
Hell yeah. Damn.
So
okay.
It's funny really quick. I remember playing through Camp Fear World in Bleach Brave Souls, and not the best representation. If you want to get the story, don't do it through Bleach Brave Souls. But that being said, I know who shows up to the Urahara shop because of fucking Bleach Brave Souls. And in my mind, that happens so quick. Like, I'm like, oh, that should be boom. We are like halfway through this fucking banger second novel. In my head, I'm like, that's a first noveler. Like right yeah. there. That's like boom. Because I remember and I know who shows up and what happens. It's Bleach Brave Souls. Like, it's fucking Bleach Brave Souls. And I'm like, all right, well, I had no idea there was this much shit that's going on beforehand.
Well, we're halfway through book two and we got all of book three. So, like, you have to get halfway through the series to get to that part.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I, too, am excited because I know a little bit. It's a little interesting, but I don't know the deets. Like, one of the most interesting things to come out of Volume 2 for me was obviously playing Bleach Brave, so I know of Hikone. Mm-hmm. Totally know Hikone. Seen the abilities. Know the Zanpakuto. Did not know some of the finer points of the Zanpakuto, like it moving itself and things like that. Did not know that it could speak. Did not know that was happening. And also, I did not really know the personality of Hikone, and I like Hikone.
Yeah, I really like Hikone too.
How just could you
happy
hate Hikone?
Lucky kid.
He's a good boy, kind of. Mm-hmm. he's a good.
I mean, look at him on the cover. Look how innocent he looks.
He's just got maybe some blood or something coming off the side of his head, but that's okay.
He's got yeah. Why does he have a chain? Why did Toki Nada put a chain on him?
No, maybe that's just how the sword came. Maybe that's the sword's like sheath. That's how it works.
Why fucking Toki? God damn it, Toki Nada. Also, want to point out like the poster you get on the inside is just Shinji looking cool.
Yeah. Is that what that is?
It's also Hikone just hanging out, vibing.
Yeah, it's the.
Hey, so let me tell you really quick the struggle. Did you order yours off of Barnes & Noble?
Yes, I did.
Did yours have a security tag on the inside, dog?
No.
Oh, my Lord. Okay.
Did
so,
yours?
Yeah, so for those who maybe are new here, I worked at Barnes & Noble for 7 years. Long time I worked at Barnes & Noble. And let me give you a little bit of a spoiler that maybe will make you not want to order from Barnes & Noble. When you order from Barnes & Noble, it does not necessarily mean it's going to come from a warehouse. They implemented this new thing now. It was new when I was leaving like fucking 3 years ago. If you order online, those orders will actually go to stores. And the stores will pull the books off of the shelves. So, obviously, if it was a perfect world, that's not that big of a problem. Mm-hmm. No biggie. But because it's not a perfect world, a lot of times they're pulling like fucking bent ass books off the shelves and stuff like that. And it's up to the bookseller to be like, yeah, that's fine. And in my store, multiple times the books were real fucked up. And it was like, we're just going to send it just to get it done. And then they can send it back if they don't want it. Part of that is because these books are in stores, they have security tags. So when I worked there, they were in the middle of phasing. There's two types of security tags. One is they're each little squares, and they put them somewhere in the book, totally random. They hide them somewhere. One of them has black markings on the outside. It looks like a barcode almost. Mm-hmm. If you see that one, return your book. because that one is meant to rip whatever page it is on. It's not meant to come off. It is meant to full on destroy whatever it is on. And that is because it's like a high theft item. A lot of times those are meant to go in plastic wrap, but obviously it doesn't work because people take the plastic off. So you'll get an asshole that'll just slap it on a page somewhere and then you're fucked. They try to make it non-intrusive, but sometimes what they'll do is they'll put on the poster, which is what made me think of this.
Oh, that's the worst.
Sometimes you'll get a book and the poster will be ripped out because it'll be on the shelf already. There's a second security tag, which was the one that was in my book, thank God. It's all white, no markings on the outside. Those are meant to peel off.
So it's the little one yeah. that goes on the side, right?
Yeah, so you can peel it off. You just get under it and it comes right off. And it's meant to not destroy anything. It's meant to be harmless security tag. They try to hide those usually so that way, you know, they can't find them very easily. But be cautious because, like I said, if you order off Barnes & Noble, which Can't Fear in World Volume 2, the whole point of this rant, is not being printed right now. It's fucking, you cannot get it on Amazon. It's like fucking $30
yeah,
to get
it's
off
so
Amazon.
Expensive.
The only place that we could find it was Barnes & Noble, and that's because quite literally they're pulling from stores. So it's like, it's just stores that still had Volume 2 on the shelves. They're probably where we both got them from. So
they got here pretty fast, though.
Yeah, and it's risky because you could get a copy and like it could be missing the poster. It could be have a security tag on there. So I always try to avoid ordering from Barnes & Noble. But in this case, it worked out really well, and it was literally the only place that we could get it at retail price. Then you got to pay fucking shipping, though, so we got fucked anyways. Mine was like $30.
Yeah. I think mine was, around 30 or 24. Yep.
Something. And that's like with tax and all that shit.
I am shocked that, Sam, you worked there for so long. I'm shocked you didn't already have all of them.
There was a time where I saw them coming in.
We had literally talked
thought,
about it multiple times yeah. when I think I had mentioned, I'm like, Can't Fear Your Own World. And Sam's like, oh, we have it in the store. Do you want to buy it? And yep. I was like, nah, I'll get it some other time.
Yep. Never did it. I should have, but never did it.
You really, really should have, man.
Yeah, I fucked up.
I'm going to check the back. How much? Okay, so this would have cost you $20. Not counting shipping.
$17.99 is what ours is listed for.
Yes, mine, but I always round up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so $17.99. After shipping and taxes, because you have to pay for shipping on Barnes & Noble because it's a fucking scam, $30.
Yep. That's good. We know part three is on Amazon.
Yeah, part three is readily available everywhere. So part two, not so much. I don't know why that is. Part one is available everywhere also. Mm-hmm. Part two, no.
I imagine it's also expensive, not just because out of print, but the anime just ended. People got to get on that bandwagon.
And I wonder if this is also not being printed as much because it's bigger than the other ones, where this probably costs more than the print.
Is three as big as this one, Pythies?
It's a little smaller.
A little bit?
Just a little bit. It's like a couple chapters smaller. By the way, these are beefy chapters in this book, man.
They really are. So for a while starting, I was like, our goal was to go to chapter 10. And I was like, that's kind of sick. If like this one is like, let's say there's 20 chapters in this book. I was like, there's going to be some short chapters. Like that's what I'm about. And then I started reading. I was like, oh, it picks up from chapter 6. Right. They're going to be long ass chapters again.
These feel longer than book
they
one.
They feel, like I was saying, there's they're just really a lot of info. Long. And like the fact that so much of it was that fight, I was like, dude. You think that fight started at the beginning of this novel? It went all the way through. It was crazy.
Yep.
Hey, you guys should wait till chapter 11.
Then we'll be zooming, baby.
In fact, don't read anything. Go to chapter 11. Just read the first word.
Chapter 11, read the first word.
This is mostly for Jose.
What page is that one on?
There's chapter 10.
I love it.
Yep. That's just for you. That's just for you, Jose.
Let's go.
The word was destruction, in case anybody wants to know. So, any last bits we want to talk about the novel? Anything we missed? What do you guys think of it as a whole? Well, I guess we're only halfway through. So what did you guys think?
I like it so far. It's just, I don't know, one big battle.
Yeah. I feel like I was kind of thinking the other day that I was thinking, you know, what if they adapted this into an anime is what I was thinking. Like, because people have said for a long time, adapt Can't Fear Your World. Adapt Can't Fear Your World. And I was like, you know, you think about it. The first novel, I don't think had any fights. Had none. Anything that was on screen was already done by the time we got there. Like Tokunata fighting the assassins, that was done. Them invading to get the sword, that was done. You know, we didn't see any of that shit. So the whole first novel was nothing. And then this one is all one fight over and over again. But it cuts away. Like at every point, the fight starts, cuts. Fight starts, cuts. I'm like, man, I wonder if people would lose their mind if they adapted it like exactly how it is.
They'd probably give it the same treatment as Thousand Year Blood War.
Move some pieces around.
Yeah.
I just want to point out that is the exact format of like most of the Wickamundo arc.
Yeah, you're right.
Ichigo is fighting Grimmjow. Then we cut back to Xyloporo. Then we cut back to Orihime. Then we cut back to Ichigo. They could do it.
It's a struggle. They could do it. How do you think people would do it the first volume where it's just literally all like hanging out, having a good time?
Honestly, that could just be like an episode or two.
Yeah, I like that. It'd be the setup.
I mean, we had the Quincy's fighting some Iran car. You could, there's some action you could spice in there.
They can beef it up a little bit.
They could cut back to a lot of that stuff, like the Tokunata bits. They could cut back to that later as like flashbacks and kind of spice them in to give Tokunata some more time and get further. Because I think, you know, Bleach people, they need a little bit of action to kick it off and get it going.
What if they made this a full-length movie instead?
There's not enough time.
I don't know, because that's another thing also where it's like, you think about it in the terms of a movie, you know, where would they stop at the end of this fight, I guess?
I can't spoil it, but it's so cool.
We'll get there soon.
I'm so excited.
It could be anything.
Hey, Sam, maybe a thing happens that'll get you really fucking crazy hype.
Okay.
Oh. All right.
All right. Well, I think that's it then. Do we want to touch? I know we joked on it a little bit, and if you've been living under a rock, the Bount defense that happened in the fucking trial, dude, that shit was so funny. That happened.
I thought Twitter was lying. I was like, there's no way.
I also thought Twitter was lying.
That shit had me. So if you guys missed it, in a like legal proceeding, a rapper's on trial right now, and his defense brought up the Bount arc. And it was something along the lines of, this lady went up and she was like, Your Honor, this reminds me a lot of an anime called Bleach. And in Bleach, there are was the Bount arc. And she knew the exact episode it started. Yep. Started on this episode, and it featured these vampires. And after the finale, after the episode ends, we never see these vampires again. They are not relevant to the story. They never return. We are like that. We are not relevant to the story. We should not be here. I was like, dude, that is so funny. And the memes and stuff that have been coming from it are incredible.
Give that woman a raise.
Mm-hmm. And I saw so many things. It was like the rapper when his defense attorney brings up the Bount arc, and he's just like, fuck. Like, come on.
He's like, wrong arc. Yeah.
And I forget, didn't he get put in jail? Is that the outcome, or is the trial still ongoing?
I don't know if the outcome has been out yet. But I would have loved to have been the prosecution, where it's like, I got this, Your Honor. Actually, if you'd watch the rest of the Bleach anime, you would see that Jinkaria actually returns in a later episode and is very relevant. There's a moment where Ichigo is seeing all of his previous victories and battles that he's had to go to, and each one is kind of teaching him a life lesson. And you see Jinkaria himself appear in that moment as well and give him parting words of advice and how he doesn't want to end up like him. And then to add on to that, Your Honor, the Mod Souls that were introduced in the Bount arc are all over the canon episodes. So her excuse of not being relevant into the canon episodes is wrong. It's just completely wrong, Your Honor. That rests my case.
And then they would bring up, hey, how come your name is AdBounce 420?
I don't think that's relevant to the case, Your Honor. But
hold on, Sam. We got to conduct an investigation on you right now. Pull up Twitter. Yeah. It says you streamed BBS.
You have to go down really far for that, Your Honor. I don't know who's looking at that, because that's way down there. That's the old me.
You just hear, we're going to take a recess. I have to watch all of Bleach to understand what's going on. Yeah. I'll be back.
So you guys have me lost.
they bang the gavel and they say order in the court, and they go, Mr. Sam, why are you sitting on a giant fish?
Well, Your Honor, this is also a Bount reference. If you watch the arc, it's pretty good.
Why are you wearing a wig and have like red contacts in? Okay, listen.
It's like, I feel like this is starting to be a lot of personal attacks, Your Honor. I don't understand where these are coming from. But, I mean, shame on me for having red contacts with a red jacket. Like, it's just a cool
look. It's my look.
Yeah. And then you and that lady lock eyes because she clearly doesn't like the Bounce, and you just both draw swords. Yeah.
Just turns into a Bleach battle, and then philosophy gets tossed around.
And then, like, they're sitting in the court, and all they hear is just swords clashing outside, and then they hear Bankai mustard gas.
Oh, no. Everyone is just gone.
It's the instant win every time, baby, especially indoors.
Mr. Sam, where is the defense attorney? She went to Soul Society? She went where? She went to the Soul
Society. She actually... learned the error of her ways, and she said she was going to go rewatch the Mount Arc right now. So I think she bounced out.
She's buying a signed Jin Kariya trading card right now.
Yeah, so she says she had to leave this instant to go get it.
It was pretty important.
Which I personally think is disrespectful, but that was her.
That was disrespectful. Your Honor, would you like a giant fish to sit on?
Because it may not look comfy, but it really is. It's all the hype right now.
And then the judge is Kari, and he goes, guilty.
Yeah. Hits you with the
done.
Bring in the next witness, and it's, what's his name? The dude with the mohawk.
Koga,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, all right, yeah, Koga.
For a second, I was like, why the fuck are they calling in Kensei?
That's what I thought you were going. I was like, Jose, where are we going?
Sorry.
Did he have a Mugurama. Mohawk? Did he have a mohawk?
Yeah, Koga had one.
Yeah, he had the red one.
No,
wait, was it red?
I think Koga in present time had a mohawk, but in the olden times he had the ponytail.
Oh yeah, you're right.
That's where I'm getting confused at.
Are we all thinking of Baz B?
No. Koga had a mohawk.
So you're saying that Baz B stole Koga's look?
I mean, listen, we know a lot of people stole the look from the mount, straight up.
Kariya looks like an OC I made at some point. It just feels like it.
But I mean, you think of the time that was created, that would have been peak, like, OC Bleach, that you would fit right in.
Stall for time. I have to look up what Koga looks like.
I think Jose's doing that. Jose, you looking up Koga right now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He does have a mohawk.
Yep.
Okay. I was thinking like bald head mohawk. No, he has like hair styled in mohawk. That's a good look. It's better than the reverse mohawk. Okay. So I'm scrolling down on the page and then it just says quick facts, leader Jin Kariya, final villain Yuha.
Yep. That's true. Because as you would know, if you watch the Mount Arc, Koga actually survives. Koga and Ron Tao both survive and they leave together.
And they are going to bring Kariya back so he can be the one true savior and defeat Yuha.
Yep. Facts.
All thanks to their great friend Omida, once they put Shad where he belongs as a Soul King.
A Soul King.
Well, I'm not going to let this die.
It all comes back together.
Comes back with using the spiral energy. You forgot about that.
All right, let's call it, boys. That's it. No more. We got too far off into the red. Thank you guys for hanging out and watching Bleach Boys. We will be back. So I think we're going to take another little break. So we'll be back in 2 weeks is what I'm going to call for this. That way we are a little under halfway done with this, just so you guys have a visual representation. We'll be back with the rest of this. So it will be a long boy episode when we come back. We'll get that done and we'll get back to you guys then.
So we'll be back on Christmas Eve then, technically.
Wow, a little Christmas present for your stocking straight from Bleach Boys. We'll be back with the rest of Can't Fear Your Own World Volume 2 Christmas Eve. In between then, we will have a little special episode. We already have a good idea that we were supposed to do last week, but just my schedule didn't work out. So we will see you guys then. We hope you guys enjoy. Of course, let us know your thoughts on Can't Fear Your Own World Volume 2. Are you reading along? What do you think of it so far? Is Grimmjow should not be in the novel at all? Let us know in the comments down below.
Whoa.
And then if you liked it, of course, like and subscribe the video. We will see you guys next time. Bye, everybody.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.